Hi, I'm Gordon Lamphere, and welcome to the Real Finds podcast. We have real conversations with key entrepreneurs, activists, and researchers, shaping the real estate industry, and as a result, our world. On today's podcast, we explore the future of work with Alana Dunoff, a strategic facility planner with AFD Professional Services and a professor of facility management at Temple University. On the podcast, we dig deep into the strategies of successful return-to-work programs, effective methods to maximize organizational productivity using the built environment, and beyond the fluff of what employees actually need in the workplace. It's well worth a listen.
Alana, thank you so much for hopping on the podcast today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for asking me to be here.
So, what got you into the world of consulting and work? How did you get into the business?
So I got into the business. I have my degree in facilities planning and management. So I sort of was in the built environment world from the get-go of my, you know, sort of educational career. I started in psychology as environmental psychology and social psych. So I liked people, but I also liked architecture and buildings. And somehow those two worlds actually came together for me. And that's how I found my path in facilities. I started consulting about 23 years ago, quite frankly, when I lost my job. and someone said, hey, can you do some consulting for me? And that kind of spiraled from that point. And it allowed me to add something else in, which was teach, which I always thought would be kind of fun to do. And so between consulting and my teaching as an adjunct professor, those two things married very well with also having a family and all the things that I wanted to sort of design my life around.
So maybe you can teach us something here today. So the world of return to office is all screwed up. And so I'm curious what you're seeing from your perspective in terms of how organizations are handling the return to office process.
So it is really crazy. I think that what has happened in the return to office is that the horses are run wild. Some of them have had ranchers that say, no, let's corral them all and put them into the pen. And other ones are like, no, we don't know how to capture the horses, so we're still going to let them run wild. So what's happened is that we have a lot of variety. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think the challenge is when an organization realizes that where they were isn't where they want to be, and now they're trying to figure out how to lasso up those horses and bring them back into the pen so they can be and do something different than they were before. And so it is a little bit like the Wild Wild West, at least for the corporate and commercial world, right? You know, hospitals and manufacturing, they're like, what's return to office? We're in, we've been in, we almost never were out. So it's just one sector that is still operating on its own rules.
So what are these challenges that we're talking about, and what are the most common ones?
So the first one, I think, is for many years, as we were coming out of the pandemic, I think employers were stuck with that the employees had the control, right? Hey, if I leave, you're not going to be able to hire me. And so there was that control. But we're a couple of years out. Economy has shifted and changed. Job market different. So that control has balanced out. But I think companies are still figuring out sort of how do I bring them back in a way that, you know, I don't want everyone to leave. I want to figure out this balance. And if there's anything that I think COVID really taught us was that maybe we were all working way too much. You know, if you look at the rest of the globe, they have longer holidays and people, you know, we never took our vacation time. So I think what we're trying to figure out now is how do we create the work-life balance that is really necessary? And that's also being driven now by new generation coming into the workplace that, you never know anything different other than that maybe mom and dad didn't work in the office all the time either. And so they're like, I don't want that. I want to have balance. And so both of those things are coming together. So then it's about creating the biggest challenge then becomes how do we create places and spaces that are attractive for a new generation, and that also allow people to have different kinds of ways that they work that supports a hybrid coming in, not coming in environment. And those are the conversations that I think corporations are having, if they haven't said, everybody just come back.
So how do we have these conversations about flexibility and kind of creating a return to office process that isn't putting a square into a round circle?
I think that the kinds of conversations strategically that I've been having with clients is really just saying, like, how do you want to work, right? What's really important to you as an organization? And if the work-life balance is important, but so is being successful, right? Companies are in business to make money, right? They hire people so they can have a product or a service to make money. So we can't lose sight of that at the same time. So it's coming to the table and saying, well, what does it look like? And I think if organizations spent a little bit more time strategically saying, how does our mission still get to grow and be, while at the same time making our knowledge force, our people who do the work, let them be successful? Happy people are productive people. So it's coming to the table and having those conversations. I think we're past the sort of edict of thou shalt, and now we have to figure out this new way of balancing what that looks like. And I think that means thinking about physical space and where people work and why people work in those spaces and what those spaces look like. And that is going to require some dollars to make those transitions for organizations. And so those are the things they have to decide. I think it struck me that a lot of companies were like in a holding pattern for a couple years. And now we're starting to see, okay, is this our new normal? How do we right size it?
So how do we right size it? Because that's a very complex process, but what are you seeing generally across the board? And how can someone take some of these ideas on flexibility and right sizing and working within your organization's value needs and apply them?
So I think that the group that comes together to have those conversations strategically is really important. It's having HR in the room. It's having strategic partners in the room to really think about what makes sense for our team and our organization. What does it look like? How are we hiring people? Who are we hiring? Do we have a young organization? Are a lot of people starting to retire? So there's some of that conversation. And then there's it's a great opportunity to look around and see the kinds of physical spaces that are working. I have this mindset around that if you really want to know how to create a great work environment, go to a kindergarten classroom. Because it turns out the kindergarten classroom is this great little microcosm of how a lot of people are thinking about space, or maybe should have been thinking about space, right? Kindergarten classroom, there's a big giant mat on the floor for like everybody to sit. And then there's tables for small teams. And then there's a desk for the teacher for one-on-one. And then there's like a timeout space if you need a little quiet time. And there's creative spaces and technology spaces. And if we start thinking of the mindset of what the office looks like, the type of variety of spaces is what we should be thinking about. Because as people are coming in for different reasons, they need a different kind of supportive space. We sort of had said, after kindergarten, you need to sit in the desk with a laptop, with a flip top. And then from that point on, that's how you're supposed to work. And then you're supposed to sit in a cubicle, and that's supposed to be how you're supposed to work. It turns out, no, not really. We could really be working very differently, and we can incorporate those kinds of strategies of different kinds of spaces to work based on the tasks and not this is one size fits all.
So one of the things that I think has been a terrible one size fits all metric is evaluating based on either butts in seats or some of our odd post-industrial age metrics. And I'm curious, how do we shift some of those metrics and evaluate things when we're reevaluating our square footage and kind of what needs to be in a workspace.
It's interesting because I think that I love data and metrics, and we say, oh, well, this is a great way to think about, you know, square foot per person. But I think it's pushing past that to think about, I don't even like to use the word productivity because I'm not even sure it's about being productive. Companies need to innovate and grow to move forward, right? They need to be creative. They need to, if they stay in status quo, that's a pretty good indicator that company is not going to be leaping forward. So maybe that measure is more around, are we innovating? Are we doing new things? If we're just doing the same thing we did 3 years ago, you know, we see companies like that, and then we don't see them anymore because they have lost their traction in their ability to sort of manage. So it's thinking about how we focus on our success, and the real metrics are the financial success of an organization, and in facilities and strategy, that's our job. We're there to, the building is there to support the people who support the success of the organization. So, you know, some of those smaller metrics may not be really so important anymore. We need to be thinking a little bit bigger, and maybe eventually we come back to those, some other smaller metrics. But right now I think it's about, are we being successful? I mean, satisfaction of people might be another metric that you might consider. Are people feeling good about their jobs and the work that they're doing? There's great research that talks about, you know, if you really want to know how people are doing, like, you know, do they feel fulfilled? Do they feel like they're achieving things, that they're accomplishing things? So maybe we need to start focusing on the people work and not the some of those metrics and square footage and numbers and things like that.
So one of the things that I've seen in your work that I found fascinating, and one of the primary reasons I reached out in the first place, was I think you've done a great job at talking about where businesses are investing and when they're, and it's seeing results, and organizations, and also where they're over-investing. And in this world, where are you seeing cultures in the office that are maybe getting the investment analysis wrong? And kind of how can we look at improving that?
So I think about this for a second. So I think that organizations are, a lot of organizations have lost their way, right? They just haven't figured out, like, where do we go now? And they're hit with so many different things that, for me, one of the organizations that I've been working with have started to say, you know what, we need to, like, let's go back and look at our mission and vision and just who we are. What's our why? Like, why are we showing up in the first place? And that has opened the door for conversations about where do we invest our time and where do we invest our dollars? And are we this big? Are we that big? Can we function as a hybrid organization and be successful? Can we be remote and be successful? You know, there are a lot of people who are like, oh, I can be productive at home, but that was never the point. And so I think there's been a tiptoeing of some organizations around how do we figure out what that is. I think real estate has been a huge challenge for organizations who invested a lot in their buildings and in their physical space, and now those buildings are empty. And so they're scratching their head and having these conversations of like, wow, you know, we need to shed space. And in one client, we looked at shedding a building out of their portfolio, and today it makes a whole lot of sense. In 5 years, it would be a really bad choice because they're going to grow and they're going to change and they would be landlocked otherwise. And so they went in and took an opportunity to reevaluate the lease to get a more favorable lease terms on it so that they could at least manage some of those operational costs for them. I think now organizations have to start investing in their physical space in order to keep their people, create new spaces for engagement, keep the excitement up, all of those pieces. So we're not investing enough in our physical space, which means we're also not investing enough in our people because they're using those spaces, and have to kind of get over that hurdle of they might have some extra real estate for now. And, you know, I don't have a whole lot of answers around the how do we get rid of shedding that. You know, someone suggested like an indoor pickleball court. So maybe there's some other things that we think about incorporating, but investing in your people and your physical space. And that doesn't mean, by the way, like knocking down all the walls and starting over again. I think there are small things that companies can do to reshape their space that could be very valuable for their people.
Yeah, I'll say this. It's a complex world on our end. We're working on almost a dozen conversion projects in some level or another right now. And I think it's absolutely critical for all the organizations that we're talking to do exactly what you mentioned, which is look 5 and 10 years out, because nothing's worse than selling that building at a loss and then having to come back into the market 3 or 4 years down the road and try to negotiate with your neighbors. So in terms of that, though, one of the other ways that we see constant negotiation and renegotiation is how we can better use the workspaces we currently have. I know you mentioned a lot about productivity and workplace culture. What are some of the steps that organizations can do to shape their culture using that space that they currently have?
So asking is the best way. I spend a good chunk of the beginning of any process talking to leadership. I did a project recently where I talked to 100 managers in an organization, which was a lot of meetings, but it was really insightful for trends and understanding how people are working, understand the differences. This is an organization that's very flexible and hybrid. So some people are coming in, some people are not coming in. What happens when they come into the office? Okay, so if you're coming in the office one day a week with your entire team, that's really different than if you're in the office for 3 or 4 days every day just doing your work and understanding that variety and flexibility. So having those conversations then strategically has allowed me to say some things like, oh, we need more collaborative spaces. So what is a collaborative space? Well, some of them are scheduled spaces that have a door and you walk into them and you can reserve them on the reservation system. Others are open spaces or even spaces with a door that I can just go, oh, is anybody there? No, great. Four of us are going to sit in there for 20 minutes so that we can work together and then go back to our individual spaces to work. It's thinking about the technology that supports that, because inevitably you have 3 people in the office and there's still someone in California or wherever they are, and we have to bring them in too. So it's being a little bit smarter and investing in some really cool smart whiteboards that allow the person who is virtual to see what's being written on the whiteboard at the same time to be really engaged that way. I'm also talking a lot about wellness spaces. And hearing about that, that's part of that work-life balance thing. And the overall look of an office, you know, a lot of offices are shifting to more like, they look like more like your living room than they did like the traditional, you know, workstation cubicles. And but one of the companies I work for, they're like no couches, like no one sits on them. They're too familiar. They want more like, if you want to have a comfortable chair, okay, have an armchair kind of thing that's a little bit more comfortable, but not a couch. But we've been talking about these wellness spaces, which are more, wellness spaces used to essentially be like a nap room or like a lactation space. And now they're going beyond that to think about how do we engage people in a different way. I've been working with a company saying like, what if we just in the break area put a couple puzzles on the table or hung a magnetic game boards. Like there's like magnetic Scrabble and tic-tac-toe that are just like, they're just moments to engage. Even coffee is a moment to pay attention to in this new world order, because a coffee break is an opportunity to engage with someone and to feel connected with someone taking the break. In for one of the companies I work for, they having like a huge coffee issue, because right now they have coffee urns. And, you know, Bob used to come in the morning and make the coffee, but Bob doesn't come in every morning anymore. So people don't know when the coffee was made. And so people started bringing in their own individual coffee Keurigs, which completely defeats the point of a coffee break. Right? Coffee break is meant to get up, get out of your chair, move around a little bit and go see somebody. And so, you know, creating, being intentional about coffee and like, hey, none of those small things, no individual get up and go and see people and talk to people and engage with people. Those are the kinds of spaces that if you're coming in one day a week or just 2 days a week, people are coming in to be with people. So we have to create people spaces, not siloed spaces that are like, I'm in my walls now and I'm going to close my door. I'm going to sit in my cubicle. The spaces that matter now are spaces that actually allow people to connect and talk to each other.
Like I remember working one of my first real adult jobs in a law firm. And, you know, that's a business that you wouldn't see as a deeply creative business. But one of the most interesting parts of what I saw transpire at the firm was just the simple, like, 2 to 3 o'clock time period when everyone would go and get coffee for their kind of last jolt of caffeine of the day. And some of the most interesting discussions that drove the business forward happened during that time. You know, with a linoleum floor and like almost nothing that would be high culture, but because it was a place that was situated perfect for folks to gather, you had an unbelievably effective space, right? And so how do we find spaces that are truly effective, and what ultimately really matters in the workplace? Because like, is it these high-end finishes? Is it, you know, great offices? Is it all ceilings? Like, what matters?
So that moment you were talking about with the coffee in the law firm, those places are the things that matter. And what I heard from a lot of managers was that the thing they miss most about the sort of hybrid and not knowing when people are in or out of the office is the pre and post meeting moment, right? Where people, like, before a meeting, you're walking to a meeting, you saw someone, you chat a little bit. After the meeting, there's the continued conversation, because sometimes the meeting isn't really over, like the topic isn't finished and you're still yakking about that thing as you walk to the next meeting or you go to have something. And that's where those innovative, unpredictable moments come from. And for people who are in office people, that's what they miss the most, creating those moments of conversation. When the Zoom call is over, it's over. There's no like, oh, I had one more thought, or hey, I meant to ask you about this. And so that's why these engaging spaces, I mean, we're talking about, you know, thinking about like the coffee shop model of, you know, what happens when you go to, you know, a coffee shop? There's spaces you can be by yourself, there's bigger tables, there's banquettes, there's food, there's coffee, and you can sit down and have a conversation. You can plug in and you can work and you can see other people and engage. So it's trying to break down some of those walls. It's not about the open office plan of, you know, kind of pre-pandemic. It's not about not having walls. It's about intentionally having open spaces that engage people when they need to work, but also having places they can retreat to when they need to have quiet, more heads down work, at, you know, as well. And so, you know, the things that really matter to me, coffee, I was so shocked by the number of people who talked about coffee. Other things that I think, the other really big thing for me, I think that really matters is culture. Culture has taken a huge hit in the workplace. And I say that has like a negative connotation, and it's not necessarily bad. For some people, it feels bad because they doesn't have the same maybe warm feeling or connected feeling. They used to know everybody in the office. Now they don't know people anymore. No one looks familiar. New hires. I haven't seen you in 3 years. How are your kids? All of those things, you know, we haven't talked about sports. All of those things that make people matter. And make a difference in an organization. And so I think companies need to be more intentional when they're deciding to how to embrace their new culture. And if their new culture is hybrid and remote, what does that look like? How do you intentionally make people want to connect and belong? In the end, we're people, we're humans, and the people matter. You know, the physical spaces matter, having a variety of spaces and flexibility of spaces, closed spaces, open spaces, you know, that kindergarten classroom sort of mentality of the different kinds of things. But it's people who use those spaces. And organizations need to think about how do we get our folks to feel like they belong again, right? That they want to be here, that it feels good to be here, that that's not just about me getting my work done at home. We know everybody can get their work done at home. Fine, great. But how do we get them to want to go beyond that and stay connected? And so creating places for people, right? Not just places for the laptop and the docking station, but places for people, and let people do what they do best. And that is engage and create and be innovative. You know, two brains are always better than one when it comes to thinking about what's happening and going forward.
So putting our brains together, you know, there's all sorts of perks, right? And, you know, depending on your business and what kind of employees you have, you're going to offer various perks. But there's a big difference between the nice to have perks and the perks that actually matter. So, like, what are the perks that are nice to have versus what are the perks that drive real tangible value in the workplace?
Tangible value is hard to, I'm not sure I know how to measure tangible value other than the end outcome. But it seems to me the things that matter are people's ability to work, whatever that looks like. And that mishmash of stuff is what I think is hard to grapple with, because we used to say everybody works in a cubicle or an office and then we're done. We've got a couple conference rooms and that's great. But I think that the things that the perks now are, well, food is a perk, right? Companies have said that's a perk that we're going to provide. We're going to lure you back in with, you know, we've always given you free coffee. Now we're going to have some snacks or subsidized meals or things like that. Do I think it adds value? Well, if it brings people into the office, then I think it adds value. And a super interesting one for one of my companies, EV stations. Free EV stations. I had quite a number of people say, oh, I come in once a week just to charge my car. It's an interesting, I was like, okay, well, I didn't see that coming, but that's great, you know? And if that's what brings them in, you know, to me, what drives people into the office is a thing that gives that company value. Sometimes it's training on happy hours. I see lots of those kinds of sort of perks happening more. Sometimes it's just refreshing the workspace, which is what my mindset is around, that if I can make a space look a little cooler and hipper and fresher, that's going to attract new talent. But also the people who do come in once a day are going to go, oh, actually it's kind of cool here, right? So, you know, the small perks, those little things, I think start to add up. For me, it's if I can get people back into the office, whether they realize that or not, that sort of driving force, then that's a good thing. And that this, of course, also assumes that they have the flexibility to create their own schedule, right? If I'm in an organization that says you're coming in Mondays and Thursdays, I don't have to push that much of a driver because I've mandated that. But there's a lot of blowback on those mandates of days, right? And that I don't think serves organizations well. That's not a perk. By the way, another perk for organizations is, you know, is not only just thinking about the 3-day-a-week work, but maybe it's a longer days, right? So thinking about that, because there's some organizations, like facilities is a great example. Facilities is in every day. So they might see their counterparts come in, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, but they have to be in every day. But what if facilities or other groups that are support services that have to be in change their mindset to say, like, you can work 4 days, but longer days, right? So the 8 to 8 or 8 to 7 or something that is a longer day that makes up for that balance so that they can have a day off too. I think that inequity is creating equity in those kinds of things for the people who can and can't come in is another perk that adds value. So for me, that, you know, it's hard to value proposition the dollars and cents, but if you have people coming into your office and they're working and they're innovating, you're going to see the outcomes be greater.
So one of the places that we've had great outcomes in terms of just general innovation on this podcast has been in our Final Four, It's a great way to wrap things up. And it's also a great way to kind of learn a little bit more about you and a little bit more about where things are going. And the question that is my favorite question to ask, besides our final one, is where do you think work is going, and what do you think will have changed the most about commercial real estate?
So right as the pandemic was happening, people were like, oh, buildings are dead. No one's going to be in the office anymore. And I was like, no, buildings aren't going away. It's not going to happen. You know, I have a 35-year career, right? The long view is that everything is going to change and nothing's going to change, because it's, you know, the pendulum is always swinging. So do I think in 10 years from now that the driver of workspace is Gen Z, and they, my students, that's, I have, you know, seniors in college, they want to be in the office. They want to learn from people. They want to grow. They want to, you know, they want to be mentored. And that doesn't happen if there's no physical place to be. They care about sustainability and social justice and work-life balance. And so they're going to be the drivers. So I think organically and intentionally, companies are going to start to figure out what are the right guardrails for being in. Do I think that in the corporate world that the 5-day work week is probably in the office is gone? I would say yes, maybe, but Amazon brought everybody back in for 5 days and they're a big company. Now, they're laying off some people, but they're a huge company and they're like everybody in. So I think we're going to see everything. And we're going to continue to see everything, which I think is great that we stop being so cookie cutter and figuring out what works best for our organization. And then even as an employee, I get to decide if I'm the kind of person who always wants to be in, or if I want to be in a company that provides work-life balance, there's value to that. So we're going to see horses still running free. And we're also going to see, I think we're going to see more corralling until the next big thing comes and happens and what that looks like as well. But I think I'm seeing a trend towards people saying, I'm kind of tired of working at home. Also, right? So that's going to organically happen too.
Yeah, there's a number of clients that we're working with that are having definitely counter the narrative that the office is dead push from their employees. Now, just as you mentioned, so many employees are, you know, they don't want to be in 5 days a week necessarily, but a lot of employees that we've seen from our clients want to be in 3 or 4 days a week and you'll have some flexibility. So I know you mentioned that a lot. How does an employer work that out in the best way possible? Do they create structure around that? And kind of how would they best create that structure?
It is a strategic top-down HR conversation and understanding from their employees what, you know, it's a conversation. You know, if senior leadership sits up in their executive suite and makes decisions on their own, they're going to be wrong. So to me, they need to engage HR. They need to, you know, engage, you know, management, leadership, management, who have people who have boots on the ground. They know what's happening, and having those conversations, I find, from a strategic perspective, that's where the meat and the meat is really there. And so they'll tell you, you'll get to know, and you will also find out. I had one organization where 50% of the leadership thought being in the office was great, and 50% of the leadership thought being in the office was fine. And so now what? But the thing is, now what is, we do both, right? That's what the now what is. And so creating policies that allow for that sort of flexibility can be a little bit harder to manage, but that's a piece of it. Also requires training of management, because a lot of managers don't know how to lead a virtual team. And I had managers who said, like, I really want my team to come in, but I don't know how to get them to come in. Or I got pushback because I'm a new manager and the previous manager said they could all be from home, but I kind of want them in. And now I'm a bad manager if I bring them in. So there's a whole training that has to happen. You know, becoming a manager doesn't mean you know how to manage people. So I think that's another skill set that organizations can give to say, like, we have to think about how we're going to, how do you manage a team that we have people all over the place and sometimes they come in and what does that look like? I think is another really important component.
Do you have any advice for folks that are managing fluid teams in particular? Because I think that's something that we have a lot of HR directors that listen to this podcast. What would be, you know, your just 2 cents on that? What, how can we try to hold water in our hands?
So there is some great leadership training out there in lots of different places. And even just spending a little time understanding that whether you have a full in-person team or a hybrid team, that every individual needs attention. You know, having the one-on-one moments are really important. If you have teams, meeting with teams is really important. Being a manager means being active and helping the individuals continue to grow in their work. So, but that's a skill not everybody has sort of off the bat. And it's even more important when you don't physically see people all of the time. And so that, I think that takes a little bit of extra emphasis and intention to be a leader and manager who says, like, I'm going to spend 30 minutes with all of my employees, you know, and I have 12 people that, you know, if you do that every week, that's a lot. So maybe it's every other week, but you've got to find ways to have those individual connections. If you only have team meetings, you are not going to manage a fluid team well.
So one of the things that's fluid in life is, you know, we start out with not nearly as much knowledge and wisdom as we possibly can. And in terms of kind of understanding a little bit more, we have a lot of younger listeners that listen to this podcast and folks that are in their mid-20s and are kind of looking at the industry and trying to understand a little bit more about how either work works or commercial real estate. And a question that we love and that they love is to hear advice from people who have spent a little more time in the industry. What would you have done at the start of your career? How would you have maybe changed something? And what little tidbit of advice would you have given?
So when I started, facilities management was a very male-dominated and still is field. I had a master's and I was entering, I worked in the healthcare system where it was very dominant men. And I was scared. I knew, but I also got tested a lot. I wish I could have told my younger self, like, it's okay, use your voice. I listened a lot. I asked questions, but I wish I'd been more curious and I wished I wasn't, I was a little scared of my shadow. I mean, I'm not anymore. Now I have a lot to say, but I wish I was more curious and a little bit stronger in my voice. But I was entering, you know, a place where I was really trying to find my way. And I certainly have. But I think that I didn't take enough risk at my younger self, that I wish I had perhaps done that more. And of course, curiosity and asking questions is probably the best. Find a mentor, have someone to really help you move through the process. And that I wish I had had when I was younger.
Well, we love asking questions. That's one of the reasons why we have this podcast.
I know.
And so one of the questions that I ask is, I'm an avid reader. I love books. I'll admit about half of the books I read these days, maybe even 60% is on tape, which is less reading than listening. But in terms of that, what's a book or a piece of media that we should pick up and explore and learn a little bit more about the world?
I like Simon Sinek a lot. I
do as well. Yeah.
We find that his work is really helpful in sort of synthesizing some ideas, and I've been able to weave some of it into the strategic work that I've done. And I think where we have been in these last, you know, 5-6 years around kind of refining our purpose and our engagement, that he has hit the mark for me very well from that standpoint. So that's that's a big one that I have. I wish I had more time to read than I do. So I was also thinking about, like, you know, there are some like gems of books back in the day that were very inspiring for me as I do my work. Like there's and these are definitely very old, but so Oscar Newman wrote a book on defensible spaces that talked about how we create safe spaces and places. I still show my students a film. It was a research done by William White, who was an urban researcher. He worked for the zoning department in New York City, and he did this research project looking at urban parks and spaces to find out what makes for a successful space. And it was done in 1969. So it is old, and the film is kind of funny. And yet every principle he has in that one is still relevant to today. So to me, it's a great one to sort of continue to remind ourselves about what really matters when it comes to space and place. And it's light, access to sunlight, and it's trees, and it's water, and it's access to people and access to engaging spaces. And those are all of the things that still matter, whether we're talking about inside spaces or outside spaces. Those are things that are all still sort of still critical that matter. I mean, we're now creating living walls inside our buildings, right? We have all this biophilia that coming in because we like nature. We're connected to it. So it makes for better spaces.
Now, there's been a lot of new research, but humans haven't changed that much in the last several hundred years.
No, we haven't.
One thing that we do like to change is we like to change our perspectives. And that's kind of the whole point of this podcast. And one of the best ways to do that is reaching out to great new people. And I'm curious, because the men and women in the arena tend to have the best advice and who to reach out to next. Who should be our next guest?
So I've been thinking about this one, and I think you should have Paul Daugherty on your program. Paul is, he's a colleague of mine within facilities management. He's an architect by training, and he wrote a book called Smart Cities, Reimagining the Urban Experience. He has taken, he's woven together technology, infrastructure, AI, and sustainability to think about how cities should think and be different, incorporating kind of what's happening and going forward. And he also has a global reach. He travels all over the world. So he just, every time I listen to him, I'm like, my brain just explodes because he just has so many fascinating thoughts, and he's really ahead of the curve as we think about infrastructure and technology and AI and sustainability, which, you know, AI building giant data centers is not the most sustainable thing in the world, right? And so he's just talking about all those things and how do we think about places and cities again and what that new experience should look like. So I think Paul could be a great asset to the program.
Well, we'd love to have him on. There's one final question that we will ask you. Besides afterwards, I'd love to get his contact information. And that's, what's your contact information? If somebody wants to reach out, learn a little bit more about you and learn a little bit more about facilities and workplaces and how to make their business a better place.
Well, one of the best ways is to reach out to me on LinkedIn. So Alana Dunoff. Find me on LinkedIn for sure. My email is also alanadunoff@gmail.com. I kept it nice and simple. So that is an easy one, as well. I do have a business, website. It's AFD Professional Services. So that is another way that they can contact me. And I love to connect with folks on LinkedIn and think about where things are going and having additional conversations. This is a big world, lots of cool people out there. So, happy to connect.
Lana, thank you so very much. And we'd love to have you on in the future.
It would be my absolute pleasure. Thanks you for having me. This was super fun.
Thanks again to Alana. We appreciate her insights. If you enjoy the podcast, please give us a like, a 5-star rating, and a review. Your comments, subscriptions, and interactions truly matter and help us continue to get quality guests.
You can find us on YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gordon Lanphier with the Real Fines Podcast. Thank you for listening.